Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Indeed, today is the day. Today is Tuesday, May the 21st. I want to give a shout out to a person who I know listens almost every day. She's been my best friend since high school. Her name is Jessica Lally, and today is her birthday. So I know every day is somebody's birthday, and there's actually a lot of other people celebrating birthdays today. So happy birthday to you as well if today is your birthday, or if today is the birthday of somebody you love. It's worth celebrating. And so happy birthday, my dear friend, Jessica. We also want to be mindful today to pray the news coming out of the portions of the United States of America where the weather wreaked havoc overnight and where folks are under really severe weather threats today. And so lifting up our neighbors and friends, our fellow countrymen in Texas and Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, I mean, all of the parts of the country that are under this severe weather watch today and those who are dealing with the aftermath of tornadoes from last night. We certainly want to call forth the church in those communities, and we also want to, mobilize the rest of us to offer the aid that we can and certainly the prayers in this very moment. There are, as there are every day, wars and rumors of wars, and we want to pray the news on those fronts as well. And you probably have some worry in your own life, and so want to pray God's intervention in your life for whatever it is that has you worried today, or at war with others, or at war with yourself, or at war with God. I want to pray that. The Lord would intervene, that you would allow the Lord to intervene, that you would acknowledge and recognize the Lord's presence in the midst of whatever valley of whatever shadow of whatever form of death is plaguing you today. So just know that my prayers are with you in the midst of that. You can always communicate with me. You can text me at 877-933-2484. You can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. If you missed something here on the show, you can always go back and grab the podcast. That's also at myfaithradio.com. Okay, so two questions that I want to set before us this morning. Where in the world are you? Where in the Word are you today? Where in the Word are you today? I'm going to keep asking that question. And how are you walking your faith out into the world in ways that honor Jesus? So it's one thing to soak and saturate ourselves in the Word. We must be doing that. It's another thing to walk our faith out into the world in ways that honor Jesus. I want to encourage you to do that today as well. And so we've been asking the question that others are asking, which is, does God belong in Congress? Does God belong in the OR? These are big questions. Does God belong in medicine? Does God belong? Well, there's a ball field question today. Does God belong on the pitcher's mound? Does God belong on the ball field? Now, as a person who played softball throughout my life, well, I mean, throughout my early years of life, and took it pretty seriously in high school, this article out of Knoxville, Tennessee, caught my attention. Lady Vol pitcher, that would be the Lady Vols. Many of you know them from basketball, but they also have an awfully good softball team. The Lady Vols, the pitcher, stopped the game, called the catcher out to the mound. Now, that's not really that unusual. We do that a lot in softball and baseball. The pitcher calls the catcher out to the mound to talk about things. Well, Tennessee pitcher Matty Moss was one strike away from sending Tennessee to the Super Regionals on Saturday. One strike away. She called for time, stopped the game momentarily. The crowd became very silent, and she called the catcher out to the mound. She and the catcher held hands for a matter of seconds. Smiled, and then returned to action. After the game, the Tennessee coach was asked about it. Here was the answer. Yes, it was a prayer. That's what Matty does. When Maddie needs to calm down, she calls the catcher out. She says, grab my hand. Now, I don't know who does the praying, and I don't know if it's out loud or silent because I have never been a part of it. But yes, it's a prayer. The coach then said she was fully aware that Maddie Moss does this, was aware of what she was doing when she called for time. And then the coach said, you know what? I love it. If that's what gets Maddie calmed down, then she can pray every pitch. I say, yay, amen. They ended the game two pitches later with a strikeout. Tennessee won the game 2-0 over North Carolina, advancing to the Super Regionals. And so I'm not saying here that God is on the side of the Tennessee Volunteers and not on the side of the team from North Carolina. I am not saying here that that you can manipulate God. What I am saying is that you should call to prayer at any moment, in any place, at any time, because you have the freedom to do so. You not only have the God-given freedom to do so in every moment in the United States of America, you have the constitutional right. All right, Tommy Binion's up next with the Daily Signal. We're going to talk about walking our faith out into the world in relationship to headline news.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey.
That little song just makes me so happy, and it means that Tommy Binion is here from the Daily Signal at the Heritage Foundation. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's great to be back with you.
Good morning. All right, so we are headed into a Memorial Day weekend. China is still, in some ways, leading the headlines in many conversations today. But, you know, we'll note that stock futures continue to rise, and it seems as if the president is tying the issue of China to, you know, former administrations and many, many decades during which business has been done badly with China. And so just from your perspective, bring us up to speed on where we are in this particular moment and maybe give us your sense of a forecast of what lies ahead.
Yeah. So in terms of an economic standoff, you would say that tensions are rising. Both nations are busily imposing tariffs on imports from the other nation. And by the way, those tariffs have a negative economic effect, right? There's really no debate about that. If we impose a tariff on Chinese goods, consumers of Chinese goods will ultimately pay a higher price for those goods and have less money for other things. That's bad for the economy. So why then is it happening? Well, the president would like to increase the pressure on China. It's bad for our economy. It's also bad for their economy. And he wants to increase the pressure, sort of flex our economic muscles and show China the amount of economic power we have and force them into a lower spot at the negotiating table to try and get a better economic deal. Of course, one of the main things we're trying to get China to do is to stop stealing our intellectual property. But it's a standoff. It's a many are characterizing it as a trade war. The president keeps showing flashes of hope, keeps saying the Chinese are on the way, they're coming to the negotiating table, and we will stand by and see. We have good news on the tariff front. On Friday, the president lifted steel tariffs on Canada and Mexico, that was not part of the USMCA. So that may also explain why stock futures are still steadily rising, as you mentioned.
Okay, so anything else on that particular conversation that you think that, you know, we really need to be paying attention to at this moment?
Yeah, I think what we need to pay attention to is the distinction between tariffs as a negotiating tool and tariffs as a permanent feature of our economy. If the tariffs become a permanent feature of our economy, if the president starts to see them as a net benefit to us to permanently have a one-up on China, I think ultimately that will be very bad for our economy. If, however, they are momentary and it's just a flex to get them to the table, that's a different story. But we really, and even when the president imposes them, he talks about their economic benefits, and I just happen to disagree there. So we need to pay attention to that distinction.
Okay, so this is an aside, Tommy, to a listener who thinks that I only wear my MAGA hat and I only ever say positive and encouraging things about the president. But I think that that you have just illuminated one place where you know, there's not total agreement here on the effect of tariffs, or and certainly when we talk about their long term impact. And we know farmers who are listening right now across America's breadbasket and are trying to figure out where they're going to sell all that pork and those kinds of things. And it's there's huge questions. And so I think that we're going to keep this conversation in front of us. We're going to be sober in talking about it. We're going to be honest. This is I think that the language of an economic standoff is really good language. And I think that, you know, recognizing that this is not just a conversation about trade with China. This is also a conversation about trade with our closest neighbors, which would be Canada and Mexico. So I think that having all of those conversations on the table at the same time is important. You surfaced the conversation about intellectual property, and I'm not sure that a lot of folks understand what that is. And so can you just explain to us, when we talk about the theft of intellectual property, what are we talking about?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons that our economy works so well, one of the reasons that capitalism is the silver bullet that has lifted so many out of poverty is the strength of intellectual property. It means that if you invent something, you have the exclusive right to sell that for a little while. If you pour your heart and soul and all your life savings as an individual or as a corporation into inventing something new, you can file it with the patent office, and you can have the exclusive right to sell that thing, that new technology, for a certain period of time, and it varies by industry. But the important thing is that people aren't going around ripping each other off. If you invent something, you get to profit off of it. And so it encourages people to invest in new technology. It encourages people to invest in new medicines. It encourages people to invest in research and development. Globally, though, you know, especially in terms of technology, other nations may not respect our property rights, our intellectual property, and China is the worst actor on the globe in terms of stealing that and selling it as their own. And so if you are a U.S. inventor of a certain technology, it may be on the Chinese market, and you may not be profiting from that. That hurts our economy. That discourages investment in research and development. And we want to put a stop to that. That's one of the really important agreements between two nations when they agree to trade with one another, is to respect the property rights of the other. And if we can't get China to do that, we can't really have a healthy trading relationship with them. And that is our biggest sticking point in this negotiation.
All right, we're going to talk about the Equality Act with Tommy up next. It passed in the House, and we want to talk about the prospects of what to expect in the Senate. So that's up next here with Tommy Bennion from the Daily Signal on Mornings with Carmen.
I'm smelling coffee, birds are singing just outside. Here comes your mercy streaming in with the morning.
All right, friends, continuing our conversation now with Tommy Bennion from the Daily Signal. You have likely heard by now, we have talked about it here, that the so-called Equality Act, H.R. 5, passed the House on Friday, 236 to 173. And so I think that it's important to recognize the language of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. It's important to recognize that she was wearing a rainbow sweatband on her right wrist. It's the best way I can describe her attire on that day. She said, "This is not about tolerance. This is about respect for our LGBTQ communities. This is about taking pride." This is certainly about pride, Tommy Bennion. What is going on, and how might we respond?
Well, I certainly think that it is not about tolerance. In fact, I think it is a rejection of the notion of tolerance. Tolerance is about religious tolerance. The Equality Act is intolerant of any religious tenet that would say that marriage is between a man and a woman, for example, or instruct any religious followers on transgender issues or sexual orientation issues. Indeed, all of those religious tenets would be thrown out by the Equality Act, and we would replace it with an ideology that says sexual orientation and gender identity are the same as race, and that in this country, you know, nothing will affect you because of those things. There will be no discrimination. So you can demand of a religious employer that they break their tenets of their religious faith to employ you. You can demand of a baker that he bake you a cake that violates his deeply held religious beliefs. That is what Nancy Pelosi clearly meant when she said this is not about tolerance. It's a rejection of the notion of tolerance. This is a long road. This is now it is a permanent fixture of the Democrats' platform. 228 Democrats voted yes for it. No Democrats voted no, although some voted did not vote. We talked about Colin Peterson on this show last week. He did not vote. So that is interesting. But my point is, you know, this is not something that is going to march through the legislative process and wind up on the president's desk this year. That isn't the point. The point is for the Democrats to put this in their platform. The SOGI ideology is now part of what they believe, and it will be something they are looking to enact in the future.
It's certainly something that folks all across the religious liberty spectrum, if they whether they be medical professionals or lawyers, or I mean, the list of people who are raising alarm bells related to this is very broad. It's very wide. And I think that's important. I was a little stunned. I'll just admit to you, I was a little stunned to hear the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, say that tolerance is a condescending word. And I suspect that I know what she means by that. She's looking for full acceptance. She actually wants us to move in the direction of being proud as a people, being proud as a nation of our gender confusion and dysphoria. And I can say this, you know, pride goes before the fall. And my concern is that we have moved to the place in our civil discourse, which is in large measure uncivil, but we have moved to a place in our civil discourse where this biblical concept of not being a respecter of persons and showing no partiality actually is no longer, that is just no longer a value in terms of the way this is talked about in public. Instead, there are those who are valued higher than others and whose views are valued as more important than others. And the LGBTQ agenda is now seen as superior to, more important than, any sort of conscience protection that a person of religious faith might have. Am I overstating things?
No, that may even be an understatement. The LGBT agenda, of course, supersedes religious beliefs and the First Amendment. That is what this bill does. Is it takes those decisions, those deeply personal decisions, the decision for a doctor on how to treat a gender dysphoric child. And it says you cannot make that decision. You certainly can't consult your religion to make that decision as a doctor. Instead, the state will make it for you, whether or not it violates your religious faith. So the First Amendment does not come into play there. It is only the state making the decision for you. It completely supplants the individual in that case. So I think if anything, Carmen, you've understated it.
All right. So Carmen has understated something today. We would like for people to take note of that. Hey, Tommy Binion, thank you so much. I want to get into the conversation about school and school choice with you as the summer unfolds. You won't be with us next week because you're going to be hopefully celebrating Memorial Day weekend. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. But thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Looking forward to that next conversation. Have a great show, Pop.
Thanks. All right, that was Tommy Bunyan from the Daily Signal. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment after we lighten up. So you may have been reading headlines about teen suicide spiking again here at the end of the school year. And we certainly want to talk about this issue with Dr. Rosemary Stein. She's going to be joining us in just a moment from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Rose and I are going to talk about teenagers, kids. We're going to talk about mental health. We're going to talk about what you and I as Christians and as adults can do, must do, are called to do. And we're also going to talk about, you know, the failure of maybe what a secular society is trying to do. All right, that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So we want you to consider joining us at the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference, July 12th and 13th at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. All kinds of opportunities, not only to, you know, hear from folks who are in the publishing industry and from authors, but to schedule one-on-one meetings with literary agents or publishers, other authors, to gain some personalized feedback on your writing and your career. Everybody's got a book in them. The question is whether or not you're going to actually be proactive and find a way to get that book out of you and into print. It may already actually be on paper, but it may need some refinement and it may need some, you know, moving forward. So this is an opportunity for networking, and you can register now at the Northwestern. Actually, let me just say the website again, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. It's July 12th and 13th at the University of Northwestern, St. Paul.
Can we all just take a deep breath about the issue of immigration? This is Jim Darlow. The issue has become so polarized today that even the nomenclature used may be offensive to some. For example, many people are profoundly disturbed by the use of the phrase illegal aliens and see it as condescending and degrading. But it's simply referring to a person who entered the country illegally or overstayed the term of a legal visa. Regardless of the descriptive word you choose, the debate over borders and immigration is another one that has roiled our nation. Fortunately, again, the Bible offers insights and answers if we have the good sense to embrace it. If we start by recognizing the inherent worth of every person and affirm we were all created in God's image, then we proceed to dig further into the scriptures. Get well-versed at wellversed.world.
That means Dr. Rosemary Stein is with us. She's joining us via Skype. Dr. Rose, welcome.
Good morning, Ms. Carmen.
Good morning. Good morning. So you and I have a sad topic to discuss today. It was really a tragic topic, but one that we really need as a culture and as people of faith to talk about and take seriously. And that is the issue of teen suicide, and actually young adult suicide. That sort of tends to spike around this particular time of year and into the summer. We call this graduation season, but tragically for a lot of folks, this is actually suicide season. Give us a sense of what's going on nationally on the suicide front, particularly as it relates to teenagers and young adults.
Well, what I see out there is a bit of a what I refer to as a suicide epidemic. And what it means is that we have teenagers that are committing or attempting suicide like we've never seen before. And the more public money that we put into this problem, the more that our suicide rates climb. And essentially, during the time of graduation, what happens is that the kids can't see who they are. They don't understand their future. Everything is dark for them. And so they think that they've gotten to the end of the rope. They don't have what most of us would remember back when we were in high school and graduating, a sense of excitement together with fear. They have only the fear, the excitement to be on that cusp of I'm young and my future is in front of me. they can't see that because it hasn't been put into them by primarily us as parents. And so when they get to that point of they're graduating, all they see is the darkness and the fear. And they say, I can't do this. I can't do this next step. I'm not big enough. I'm not old enough. I'm not mature enough. I'm not strong enough. And I'm going to let everybody down. And it's usually the nicer kid that has all of these thoughts. And he's usually battling it by themselves. So it comes as a surprise because he or she is the nice kid. And then all of a sudden, that nice kid is gone. And that's where we've gotten to this point that we're thinking that this is this kid who's a nice kid and has been at home has what they need to make it to that next point in life. And that child has not come out of being a child into being a young adult yet.
So this is Dr. Rose. This is where, you know, I want to tread carefully because I recognize this is such a painful reality for families. But I also, you know, I also want to acknowledge that every time I read a story, and oftentimes the story from the perspective of parents who have lost a child, whose child has taken their own life, almost every story turns immediately to the lack of or the insufficiency of mental health resources in this country. And yet you and I we both know there are more mental health resources available now. It's almost overwhelming how much emphasis there is placed on mental health access and mental health care. I'm not saying that it is sufficient to the need. I'm saying that maybe it's not the holistic answer to the question. I mean, obviously, if what we are prescribing, which is mental health treatment and prescription drugs, if that's not answering the question, then the question is different than this person just has something wrong in their brain.
That's absolutely correct. And mental health resources and perhaps even medication, they're adjuncts, they're assistants in this. What really these kids need as they're growing up is valuable time, acceptance from mom and dad, the support of their family. And that is really hard when they're teenagers and they're bucking against you. And that is what they need the most. It's hard to be supportive of a teenager who has all these questions. They're kind of dark. I just don't get you anymore, the parent says. And you just have to be with them in the middle of all that and almost feel yourself being taken down and almost drowning and be the one to find your child at the end. But this is something that all of us as parents of teenagers have gone through. But it's when we sort of give up on our kid and we say, well, I can't seem to fix this. So what you need is a good psychiatrist, a good psychologist, and then the parent steps back. And I'm not saying that step of having a good psychiatrist or psychologist is a bad one. But you as a parent, as the primary support system of the kid, has to be the first psychologist and psychiatrist. And then the others will help you along the way. But nobody knows your kid better than you.
Yeah, the child is given to the parent as a sacred trust. And when I'm reading these articles, there's one from yesterday in USA Today, related to this topic. And as I'm looking through the questions of their survey questions that they conducted via an online poll between April 30th and May the 5th, even the questions that they ask, I think help us see part of the problem. If you as a parent are failing to see the impact that social media and your child's phone is having on their real relationships, if you're failing to see that, only 14% of parents surveyed think that their child's phone or mobile device usage affects their relationships with others.
Wow.
37% of them say it doesn't affect it at all. And another 23% says it only affects it a little. 24% says it affects it some. There's only 14% who say that their child's phone or mobile device usage has a lot of effect on their relationship with others. Now, you and I just know that that's not true. And so the perception of parents related to the social isolation, the related to social media, the social dislocation related to the breakdown of the family, and the number of times that we move for jobs and we just uproot kids and we don't have them in church. None of that is dealt with in any of these public conversations about why kids are despairing today, why they're despairing to the point of despairing of their lives. And so, you know, I appreciate that you constantly surface with us these concerns. And, you know, I'm going to use the word holistic, but this holistic welfare of our children is our responsibility as adults.
It comes down to our children don't have enough wonderful interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they don't have enough heart. There's not enough of it. Not because they're not good kids, but it's because we have to have a heart filled with friends and support and our family. And they don't have that. That's the center of the kid. And we haven't built that. So it's the interpersonal relationships. You can't make them on social media. They're fake. It's like I call Facebook fake book. It's fun to dawdle in it. It's dabble in it. It's fun to communicate to friends. I've made friends that I would never have made through Facebook. But let's be real about this. It's really fake book because it's not deep. And so when you build your relationships on social media, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be despondent because it's not real. The people around you, the people that love you, even if they're 1,000 miles away, that's real. And our kids are not getting enough of it.
So you guys can visit Dr. Rosemary Stein on Facebook. She is she gets real there. She is at Rosemary Stein MD. She and I are going to continue our conversation just after this break. We're going to talk about sunscreen, and then we're going to talk about summer. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So Dr. Rosemary Stein is here with us today, and she is now going to tell us what to do about. So we've been told over and over again we should slather our children with sunscreen before we send them out there into the sun, and now come to find out that's been leaching all kinds of nasty chemicals into their little bodies. And so now what are we supposed to do? It's a little bit like mustard. I don't know. I recall that, like, at one point in time, you know, you couldn't eat mustard, and then it was like, oh, no, mustard is good for you. So help me understand the conflicting news that I hear about things like sunscreen.
Well, I think when it comes to sunscreen, we really don't know what the outcome of all this is, because the new ingredients, the oxybenzene and all that stuff, they're new. So we don't know what high content of this in your bloodstream is going to do. And it does get into kids' bloodstream. It gets into everybody's bloodstream, but they're smaller. So when you're slathering kids up in this really nice smelling, expensive, creamy stuff that you can't see, and it makes them look so good, then eventually that's getting into their blood at, you know, even greater amounts, because you're really trying to protect your kids. So you're putting extra on them. And they're saying, like, use between half an ounce to an ounce each time. That's amazing. And then you're supposed to put it on every 2 hours. So it's really something that we don't know what the outcome of all this sunscreen scare is, one way or the other. Are they bad ingredients? Well, I would say that these artificial chemicals that we're putting on the kid probably have the ability to harm them more than to help them. So here's, once again, the recommendation that Dr. Rose gives is when it comes to sunscreen, maybe just use common sense and let's not put our kids out there to bake. That's kind of difficult because kids like to be outside between 10 and 2. But let's find other things for them to do. Let's be creative and bring them inside for a little while, or have them have short breaks and do board games. And just let's use more common sense than sunscreen. And I think that our kids will do better in the summer, because it's really those hours between 10 to 2 that we're not supposed to be exposing them to that kind of sunlight. Sun is good. it's not a bad thing. It gives us vitamin D. It makes us feel good at small doses. But when we leave our kids to sort of bake outside, that's not going to be good. And some sunscreen is going to be okay if you put some of it on them once or twice at an application. But this continuous putting it on every two hours because they're out, and well, I don't want to disappoint them and not bring them in and bring them inside. That's really what's going to cause the problem. So I think that we've created a problem, and then we've created another problem, which is what usually happens when we just don't think about what we're doing in that word that you've been using today, holistically.
Hmm. All right. So now we've probably just scared people a little bit, but you ought to go online. You ought to check it out. You ought to see what's going on in the sunscreen conversation today. And Dr. Ruth, you know, I see advertised all of these organic, mineral, non-chemical sunscreens. I still think that the same common sense applies, right? Like we're talking about protecting our child reasonably from sun overexposure. And there's lots of ways to do that. You can, you know, when you're on the beach, you can have a little tent or a little umbrella, and you can get off of the beach or out of the sun for periods of time during the day. You are actually the parent. And so one of the things that I think Dr. Ruth and I are both saying is be the parent. Be the parent in this and don't rely on a chemical solution like sunscreen for everything. Yes? Is that fair?
That's right. It's just, you know, we have to plan ahead, and we just use our common sense. And telling people that today is sort of like insulting them. When parents will ask me about things, and I'll say, let's use our common sense, they look at me like, no, we all need to use more common sense. We need to sit back and think through this and respond and not react. It's the same thing with this. Don't go and throw all of your sunscreen away. That's not what I'm saying. Respond, don't react. Think about what can I do to plan better?
Good. Okay. So in the last couple of minutes that we have, talk with us about kids and the summer months.
Well, that, I love this conversation. And I talk to my parents about it a lot. And I say, sit down with a notebook and think about the things that made your childhood fun. What made summers fun for you? And obviously, you know, a lot of parents work. We have other things to do. But if you think about it, and the same thing, if you plan ahead, you can come up with some really great things for your kids. And the simplest, going over to a great aunt's house or choosing something that, and this doesn't, I mean, the kids would roll their eyes if you say historic, but call it something else. But what are your really cool historic places that you can go over there? And maybe, you know, if you got kids that age, dress up like the people from that era, like a trapper or, you know, a person that was in a wagon going across America. These are things that add character and give them context about what your area, what the kid's family was about. If you go out and visit grandma, you know, have grandma sit around the table and tell them what you were like as a kid, even if some of it might be painful. You know, you used to eat glue, but the kids will laugh and they'll know something about you that they hadn't heard before, and it's just a kid once, and she did really crazy, stupid stuff too, and that was okay. And we do really dumb stuff, and mom gets on our case about it, but it's okay. We're going to be fine, and that's what builds a kid. Just the simple reality. This is, I think we're adding enough of that, and this is not to put down Disney World, because Disney World is a great place for kids to visit, but it's adding to the fakeness when we make artificial places the place to visit. Then the realness of life, the fun, the really fun stuff, like just going there and throwing a ball around, those kind of planned stuff. And sometimes it doesn't have to be planned. It can be spontaneous, but we got to think about it more than just planning all our artificial sort of vacations. And there's too much artificial and not enough real.
Love it. I love it. I love getting real with you, Dr. Rose. You guys can check her out on Facebook, Rosemary Stein, MD. And Dr. Rose, thank you. Thank you again for being with us.
I always enjoy it, Miss Carmen.
Thank you. All right. So we want our kids to have wonderful interpersonal relationships, and we want to get them engaged in things that are real so their hearts might be full this summer of all kinds of good and great things. That, trust me when I tell you, is going to improve not only their mental health, but their overall health. All right. We got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. So I appreciate you guys are communicating with me where in the Word you are today. Some of you are in the Psalms. Some of you are obviously in the Old Testament, some in the New Testament. Some of you, man, you are all over the place. So you must be doing a Bible reading plan that takes you to the Old Testament, the Psalms, and the New Testament. So I appreciate that. Let me ask again to everyone, where in the Word are you today? Where in the Word are you today? And we're gonna spend some time in the next half hour talking more about suicide, talking more about suicide across the country, and what we as Christians can and must do in the face of it. And so, if my conversation with Dr. Ruth about Dr. Rose about teen suicide, if that really piqued your interest, then we're going to actually continue a conversation about that here with each other. And so I want you to be thinking and considering about those people who are living on the periphery of today's conversations. So as we go to the break here, we're going to look forward to talking with Nicole Phillips about a new kindness challenge. We're going to look at how we can catch people doing good.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.